Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 71. We're in chapter 7 of the book of Mark. And we're going to continue basically through this book and the others, but especially this one. A lot of repetition, obviously, of events that we've covered before that. So we'll be going very more rapidly through it and highlight, you know, those points that were not either covered or stressed in the book of Matthew. And so we are now in verse 4, basically what we read here. People came from Jerusalem, from the Pharisees. They heard about all the signs and wonders that Jesus Christ was performing in the Galilee. And obviously, word of mouth, people go to Jerusalem. They tell the people, you know, they go to the temple and they tell their relatives and neighbors or whatever. And everybody in Jerusalem now knows about it. And the leadership is fully aware of this man from their point of view, this prophet from Galilee, and they want to go, want to know exactly what is behind it. Now the reality is they already hear and know about signs and wonders and miracles, so it's not a question that, can you really do this or that, or who are you? You see, when people have the mind of God and the Spirit of God in them, they immediately comprehend and understand what is it that is happening here. But these people, unfortunately, in contrast to the multitudes that have experienced Jesus Christ, seeing the signs and wonders and miracles that he performed, these people came with their picky, you know, points. And so they come to him, you know, they look at his disciples, you know, they came to find fault. And so they see some of the disciples eating bread without washing their hands, just in the manner of the Pharisees, you know, the sect of the Pharisees, something that has nothing to do with the law of God. And so they begin to criticize. And so we read, as a look at the disciples, seeing that some of them are not doing it, they complain to Jesus Christ, you know, well, how come your disciples are not doing it, you know, just like we do. And so we read in verse 3, for the Pharisees and all Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands in a special way. Why? Because, you know, the rabbis rose and began to interpret the law of God first by default because the priesthood was not doing their job properly, you see. And then, beside interpreting the law, explaining the law, they began to invent their own ideas, their own do's and don'ts, and they made it a part of the law, an extension of it, you see. And so, obviously, well, what do people know? They just follow, you know, the, whatever the rabbis are saying. Today, you know, people follow the minister, they follow the priest, they follow, you know, the, you know, religious clerics in Islam, and so it is in every religion. You see, people are like dumb sheep. They don't check into it. They don't say, now, wait a minute, is this from God, or is just, you know, you're concocting it from your own brain? You see, they don't think that way. And so you find not only the Pharisees doing it, but all those who obviously followed all these religious teachers. So the Pharisees and the Jews, they do not eat unless they wash their hands in a special way, holding the tradition of the elders. So that means this was the source of it. The traditions of the elders, which are in accordance with the law of God, and they are good. But the traditions of the elders that were not good. You see? Because even Paul talks about tradition. There is nothing wrong with tradition if it is in accordance with the law of God. But if it's not, that's what the problem is. And it says here in verse 4, when they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. Well, obviously, you know, if your hands are dirty, you know, you've been working outside, you know, you hear the mother always yelling at her kid, you know, go wash your hands, you know, you got dirty hands. They say, there's nothing wrong with that. But they made a religious ceremony out of it. And not only a religious ceremony, it was not just a question of washing hands, but doing it in a certain way. And to this very day, you can still see that when you go to a Jewish community, to a religious Jewish community. It has to be done in a certain way, you know, you have to say certain things, and you know, you have to dry your hands in a certain way. I mean, the whole thing becomes very foolish. That was not the intent of it. Because, you know, God wanted his people to be a holy people, a clean people, and they had an awful lot of rituals that he gave them. It's not man-made, it's not Mosaic, because they were all symbolic, you see, but, you know, man decided on his own to invent righteousness too. And this was a part of it. And so there are many things, it says that they do, that they have received, and, you know, from the elders, like the washing of cups and pitchers and copper vessels and couches, I mean, all kind of things like that. You know, you leave it up to men, and you see it in every given religion. It's not only a Pharisaic problem. You see, the Pharisees, that's a mentality and a part of human nature that is found in every single one of us if we begin to walk in that direction. And you find it in every given nation or religion. So we should not pick on the Pharisees, you see. So that's a part of the story here. That's a problem with human beings who do not lean to the understanding of God but to their own understanding. That's a global problem. Verse 5, then the Pharisees and the scribes ask him, why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders? They don't ask, well, how come they do not obey the law of God? You see? And that's the way it works, you know. How come you're not doing, you know, things according to our church? That's the way people talk to this very day. You know, you don't do things the way our minister does it. Or our church, or our group, you know, whatever it may be. And people do not ask, what is it that God said? Oh, they ask, what did Mr. So-and-so say? Who cares what Mr. So-and-so said? You see? If it's not the law of God. But if it is, that's a different story. That's not Mr. So-and-so. It's God himself and Jesus Christ, you know, and the people that know the Bible. You see, the teachers. That becomes a different story. Yet people separate God, separate the Bible, and they go to the person himself, and they create an idol worship there. And God is not interested in that. And so this is what these people were doing at this point. Why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands? And he answered and said to them, and he does it to every single one of us who behaves in that manner, in any given religion, anybody who's going to read this. If this is what we do, as some would say, if the shoe fits, wear it. You see? That's applicable to all of us, just not, you know, those Pharisees. You know, this is a problem that all of us have. If we do not, watch ourselves, and a lot of societies, they have got their own cultural way, their own protocol. You see, it becomes a holy thing, and if you transgress that, that's a horrible thing that you have done. You see, and they regard it as if it is a horrible transgression, akin to that of the law of God, and it's not. You see, it's human, and that's all it is. Now, you should be, you know, respectful of people's cultures and ways of doing things if it is symbolic and it means something to them. But never elevate it to the level of holiness. It has nothing to do with holiness. And this is what these people were doing, and that's where the problem was. So anytime we elevate anything that we do, any, you know, mannerism or protocol or ritual or things, you know, that we do, that somebody concocted in their own brain, you know, whether it is interesting or good or nice, that's neither here nor there, you see. You should never elevate it to the point of holiness. Only God, who is holy, is the author of holiness, you see. And without that kind of holiness, we are not going to see God. But, you know, if we forget about the holiness of man, we transgress the holiness of man. It's neither here nor there, you see. The only thing that counts is, you know, if we are respectful. If we honor people, you see, if we give honor to whom honor is due. So we don't need to be arrogant on one hand, you see, but respectful and mindful and caring and all that, but at the same time never elevate it to the level of the holiness of men. There are many things that society does, and some people begin to judge one another by that, you know, standard of the society, or the church, or the group, or the organization, or the family. Well, that's the way we do things here. If you don't do it, you are an unholy and unrighteous person. You see, that's the way we function in any given society on the face of the earth. And that's not godly. And this is what Christ is saying here. He answered to them, well did Isaiah prophesy of you, hypocrites, as it is written. In other words, if this is the way you're behaving, and if you elevate your man-made traditions and concepts and things like that to the level and the standard, you know, the holiness of God, and at times, you know, you even make light of the law of God so that your tradition becomes more important, that makes you a hypocrite because you come in the name of God, you see, and claim, well, this is godly. Now, if you don't, that's a different story. But these people, you know, they are the teachers of the law. And so they present it as if it is holiness from God. That makes them hypocrites. As it is written, these people honor me. That's the issue, you see. That's the relationship between man and God. They honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. And in vain, because their heart is far from me, because they do not really honor me, because I did not give you, you know, these man-made traditions, and, you know, don't go about claiming that it is from me, Therefore in vain do you worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. You see? And that's a universal problem. All societies have the same, all cultures have the same problem. It's been always like that from the Garden of Eden. And we have to distinguish between the tradition of men and, yes, showing respect and honor to men. You see, you don't need to be offensive. But on the other hand, never claim this is holiness and righteousness from God. And if somebody doesn't do it, you know, because they happen to come from a different culture, society, and they do things differently, we don't hold them, you know, as beneath us or lowly people or uncouth or, you know, unmannered, you know, uncivilized or things like that. You see? This is, in essence, what these people were doing here. They were coming and condemning the disciples of Jesus Christ because they didn't do things the way, you know, the traditions of the rabbis of Jerusalem, you know, were. That doesn't make it holiness. You see? That's where the hypocrisy is. And all of us, you see it in every group and organization. You know, if you've just been alive enough to be in any group or church or organization, you see the same thing there. Or even in companies, you know, in business community. And we have to distinguish, you see, between our own inventions, which is fine for ourselves, but let us not ever claim that it is of God, and therefore this is what determines whether you're a good person or not, a holy person or obedient person to the law of God. So this is the issue here. It's a religious matter. You see, it's a matter of theology. It's a matter of the worship of God. And this is what people do. Verse 8, for laying aside the commandments of God, that's where the problem is. You hold the tradition of men, you know, you're elevated to a higher level, or even if you have elevated, you know, to the level of the law of God, you're already in the wrong. You see, God is not interested in your nature, character, and mind being formed in the minds of others. He wants His. He is the Father, not man. You see, but in the, you know, because of the arrogance of men, they elevate themselves in their own sight, and they make people worship them, follow them, idolize them, you see, follow their example. Paul made it very plain. You follow me as I follow Christ. And if you don't know what Christ is all about, how would you know what Paul is talking about? Or whether what he does is right or wrong? When he is the man that said the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. I know the things that I must do, and I do not find myself doing them. You see, oh, wretched man that I am. So the only thing he's talking about is when you know Jesus Christ and you know his law and you see me do that, you follow that. So it's not me that you follow. Yet a lot of people, in their own ignorance and in haughtiness and arrogance, you know, they exalt themselves above others and they want people to follow them. And it's no longer following Christ or following God or his teachings. This is the problem that he's addressing here. And all of us are guilty of idol worship when we follow the example of men as if it is, the example of God, or the teachings of God. We should be very careful of that, because many people are idol worshippers without even realizing it, and many people who are in leadership positions are causing people to be guilty of idol worship when they set themselves as the example, you see, apart from the nature and the law of God. And that's a major problem that you always find in every given organization and group. Every time you become a part of it, you're already in trouble. If you're not careful all the time and you are not on guard, you begin to follow men and you think that you worship God. You see, we should never allow men to come in between us and God in these areas. And so he said to them, all too well you reject the commandment of God that you may keep your tradition. You see what happens to men? And here it is, teachers of the law. These are not, you know, the plumbers or the electricians, you know, and the physicians or things like that, the political leaders. We're talking about men of the law, men of religion, men who come in the name of God. And that's what they do, you see. And that's been always the problem of the people, you know, the men of religion. So you have to suspect them more than suspecting even the ordinary people or, you know, just teachers of secular nature. Those people, at least, are not going to tell you, hey, this is the way God is. You see, they're not going to deceive you there. But the men of religion, you know, unfortunately, when there is arrogance there and haughtiness, and oftentimes you may not see it on the surface, you may think, you know, well, he's a holy Joe. They're the most guilty and have always been the most guilty in deceiving people and leading them astray. And they're doing it, unfortunately, to this very day, and you've got to be always watchful. That's what he's saying here. You're setting aside, you reject, in essence, the commandment of God, that you may keep your own tradition. For Moses said, honor your father and your mother, and he who curses father or mother, that is, curses father and mother, you know, dishonors him, and in essence, honors the leader more than he honors the father and mother who come directly after God. They are your immediate gods. They created you. They gave you life. You see? They're the ones to teach you right and wrong, you know, from the Word of God. And yet men come in between, become the leaders, and they come between the, you know, the children and the parents. You see? And they defile the relationship there and cause people to dishonor father and mother. And so this is what it says here. Moses said, that means, I, Jesus Christ, told Moses to tell you. As a matter of fact, he is the one in person who told it to all of Israel from the Mount of Sinai, you see, when they gave the 10 oracles. Honor your father and your mother, and he who curses father or mother, let him be put to death. Well, this is Moses said later on, because God now was not speaking personally to all of Israel. You see this part. But he's the one that gave him the instruction. But you say, if a man says to his father or mother, whatever profit you might have received from me, is korban, that is, a gift of God. In other words, there are certain things that people, you know, should care, you know, for their parents. Instead of that, you know, the religious leadership always try to get them, you know, to give it to the church. You see, that's in essence what he's talking about here. And that is done to this very day. As I mentioned before that, you know, there are many places where you can go and you see huge edifices called churches. You see, glamorous in many ways, abundance of riches in it, and then horribly poverty-stricken people all around it, especially when you go to places where people are very devout toward religion, be it in Buddhism, in Shintoism, where you see all those temples and then horribly, you know, stricken people, you know, in poverty all around them. Or you go to Islamic places, you know, the mosques, some of them are you know, dazzling, you know, splendors, you see, and a lot of poverty-stricken people around. Or you go to churches, like in the Middle Ages, you see, and even to this very day, you go to places like in South America, you see those huge buildings, churches, and very poor people. People would go, you know, without shoes. Or, you know, deprive their children of food and shoes and clothing in order to give to the church. And they felt very holy about it. And everybody was sacrificing, you see. That's not of God. That's demonic. God is the owner and the possessor of heaven and earth. He created us to live in paradise in the Garden of Eden, not in poverty, so that few people can have it all. And so when the glorious and majestic and magnificent temple was built, or before that the tabernacle, it was not built by poverty-stricken people, but by people who were abundantly blessed by God. You see? So they were not going, you know, hungry and destitute in order to build a magnificent edifice to God. God is not interested in that. It was out of the abundance of their heart, or their possessions that he gave them to begin with, that they gave. And that's the way God wanted it to be. And yet there are all those people, you know, always trying to hit you for money. In religion, give, 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 give. You know, it's not enough. Give, you know, this, but give more and give offerings and give, you know, and, just like the business community, they, you know, the tax, you know, collector. You pay tax, you pay added tax, you pay this kind of tax, you pay that kind of tax, you pay, you know, an added tax, you know, all kind of things like that, a tax on a tax. No heart, no mercy, no compassion, and people are going in poverty, and people are in destitute conditions. You see, and they have to work two, three jobs, or, you know, get the mother also to work, and sometimes the children. You see, that's a demonic religion, a demonic way of life, a demonic culture and business community. It's not of God. And that's unfortunately what men of religion who should have known better were doing. And that's what he's condemning here. That's applicable to every level of society, every aspect of it. You see. And that's what he's saying here. You say that if a man says to his father or mother, whatever profits, in other words, you know, why give it to your father and mother? You know, they're just flesh and blood. You know, they're not that important. The temple is more important. Religion is more important. God is more important. And what they mean by that, really, you know, it's for themselves, so they can feel aggrandized, and, you know, the building in which they serve, you know, can be glorious. They couldn't care less about the people. And then he said, verse 12, then you no longer let him do anything for his father or his mother, making the word of God of no effect through your tradition, which you have handed down. And many such things you do. That's a way of life for you, you see. And so he's warning not only them, you see, of this kind of behavior, but also of the dumb sheep. Don't follow for that. You see, don't fall for that. Don't follow this example. Well, you know, let them talk all they want, you know, those windbags about, you know, being the servants of God and how much you should give to God. You see, you have to study the mind of God, the nature of God, the law of God, and to see how God cared for everyone, and not fall for those who claim to be, you know, coming in the name of God, and they want to strip you out of everything you have. You see, including your property, and, you know, even after you die, you know, they say, well, make sure before you die that you write a document there to give us your property. A lot of people in their foolishness do it, and they couldn't care less about their children, according to the law of God, where parents should care about their children, their, you know, grandchildren too, leaves, you know, something behind for them. Instead of that, they give it to the church. You see, or they donate it, you know, people die, and you hear about it all the time. They donate huge sums, you know, to the medical profession, to this and that, and all kind of causes, and their children may sometimes go begging. You see, not that it happens in every case. And God is not interested in that. And that's what he's saying here. You make the word of God of no effect. You see, you have to do whatever you do in life based on the word of God and the tradition and the teachings of God, not of that of man. And then verse 14, when he called all the multitude to himself, he said to them, hear me, everyone, and understand. Because those guys obviously don't get it, claiming to be the religious leaders. But I want you to understand that. There is nothing that enters a man from outside which can defile him. Speaking again here about the, you know, the washing of the hands. But the things which come out of him, those are the things that defile a man. And if anyone hears, you know, if you've got ears, that is, anyone has ears, let him hear, you see. Let him hear the truth. Not, you know, the words of men that are not the words of truth. And when he had entered a house, somebody's house, that invited him over, and he came over there, away from the crowd, his disciples asked him concerning the parable, so he said to them, well, they still took it as a parable. Not everybody understood what he was talking about, you see. And the disciples, instead of paying attention to what he's talking about, you know, they did not get it. And so they ask him, well, what is that parable? What is it exactly what you were saying by that? And so that's his reaction to them, to every single one of us. And oftentimes that's what happens. You stand up, you know, and you teach the law, and people still don't get it. They're not listening. That's why they don't get it. Their mind is somewhere else. You see, their mind is affected by the other teachings that they got from, who, you know, from the world or other teachers or, you know, their own concoctions. And even if you speak very plainly, they still don't get it. And then they come at you and they say, well, what about this and what about that? And you said to them, haven't you been listening to what I was saying all this time? That was a problem of the you know, the disciples of Christ at this point. And so this is what he says to them and to all of us. Are you thus without understanding also? Do you not perceive, which you should, that is, that whatever enters a man from outside cannot defile him, you know, those physical little things? This is not what defiles you, you see. You know, you may get this sometimes if you don't clean your hands and you get stuff that shouldn't enter into your stomach, you know, you might get an upset stomach, you see, but that's your upset stomach, you know, it'll come out. But it's not you. It's not, you know, your spirit. See, because all of his teachings are spiritual, and even the physical things have spiritual connotation and meaning. So it says, because it does not enter, in other words, the things that come from outside do not enter into his heart, but his stomach. And those people, you know, the Pharisees cared more about the stomach than about the heart. And so, on one hand, they were poisoning hearts and minds, you see, and they were striving very hard, very meticulously to keep the stomach clean. And that's foolishness. You should, you know, take care of your stomach, but you should care about the spiritual matters even so much more so. And so he says that enters into his stomach and is eliminated, thus purifying all foods. That's a system that God created us in our body, you know, created in our body. And he said, what comes out of a man, that defiles a man. And this is what the Pharisees should have been concerned, you know, most of all, instead of, you know, first and foremost, but instead of all the other picky things. And he said, this is the main problem, you know, for from within, out of the heart of man, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. So you go to eat and you didn't clean your hands properly in accordance to the Pharisees, you see, and yet your heart might be pure and clean. And then on the other hand, you may do it according to the way the Pharisees do it, and your heart can be full of all these evil things. What did you gain by that? That's what he's talking about. Care first about the weightier matters of the law, as he said to them in Matthew 23:23. And then take care of the little ones also, the little things. But don't do it in such a way that has nothing to do with the will of God or the nature of God or the holiness of God. And so he says, all these evil things come from within and defile a man. Verse 24, from here he arose and went to the region of Tyre and Sidon. Now he goes to Lebanon. A lot of people don't realize that Christ was doing his ministry in Judea, in Galilee, you know, which are two regions, part of the same land of Israel, you see. And then he also went to the other side of the Jordan, which was present-day Jordan. You see, that's the second country. And then he also went up to Lebanon now and then, Tyre and Sidon. That's, you know, today is the third country. So, you know, his ministry was in essence in three countries, though mainly in the Galilee and then in Judea. And so he entered into a house and wanted no one to know it, but he could not be hidden. So he went to a house of a Jew, because there were Jews that were living up and down the coast there, you see. And so he entered into a house of an Israelite, and he was not interested in the natives, which, you know, mostly were non-Israelites, you see. We're not interested in doing any work for them. Probably, you know, that Israelite may have been, you know, an individual that lived among many Gentiles there. And yet, everybody heard about it, you see. His fame already went throughout the entirety of the land. The caravans and the traders go up and down, and, you know, they tell everybody about it. So by now, his fame is widespread. So obviously, when he comes over there, he cannot hide that fact. You know, they see a group of people, he and his disciples come in, and people already know. And so this is the background to what is happening here for a woman. Verse 25, whose young daughter had an unclean spirit, heard about him, and she came and fell at his feet. And we mentioned that earlier in Matthew, so we're not going to repeat everything here. And the woman was a Greek. She was a Gentile, she was Greek. A lot of Greek people that were at the time, from the days of Alexander the Great, a Syrophoenician by birth. In other words, she was born in that territory, but she was Greek. And she kept asking him to cast the demon out of her daughter. You see, why would she do it? You see, how does she know that? Well, beside all that she heard about him, obviously, if there are Jews living there, there are synagogues, and therefore Gentiles, you know, were inclined. They went to the synagogue and heard about the law of God. So, you know, they knew enough to know the God of Israel. After all, those Israelites have been around for many, many centuries, and the nations around it, you know, knew something about the religion of Israel. And now when this prophet appears, obviously already have enough information to know that he is capable of doing it. And so, you know, there is a measure of faith on the part of this woman. She's not totally ignorant of the religion of Israel and the God of Israel and the prophet, you know, and the Messiah of Israel. And so this is what she's asking for. But Jesus said to her in verse 27, let the children be filled first. You know, this is my commission. I came to my own. I came to my wife. I didn't come to somebody else. You see, in other words, I didn't come for somebody else's people or wife, even though he's the creator of the heaven and the earth, you see. But mainly his commission was to come and heal his people, die for his people. And once he does it and he heals them, brings them back to himself, marries them, then he sets his hand to deliver all the nations of the earth and to become the children. That's in essence what he's saying here. I didn't come for them. I came for the children. So it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. You see? And they're in a different category. You see? And it's not that he's putting her down. And she answered and said to him, yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs, the puppies, you know, some people say that's the correct translation, under the table eat from the children's crumbs. You know, people care about their children, but also they love their little dogs. You see, they love their dogs. And so in essence, he was trying to make a separation there. These are the children of the kingdom, the others are not. They are sort of, you know, just like little animals that you have all around you, you know, that you care for, that you want, you know, that you take care. But they're not in the same category. That's what he's talking about. And then he said to her, "For this saying, go your way, the demon has gone out of your daughter." So she fully understood what he's talking about. She was not offended. There was no reason to be offended here. And so her humility was still there and her faith was still there. And because of that, you see, as Peter said, God is not a respecter of persons. He said that to Cornelius, "I perceive that God is not a respecter of person, but in every nation, you see, in every tongue, in every culture, if there are people who fear him, you see, and do, you know, that which is right in his sight, he has respect for them. They may not know it all, you see, but to the degree that they walk in proper knowledge and understanding that they may have, God respects all of them. After all, he is the God of all the creation. Verse 3, "And when she had come to her house, she found the demon gone out, and her daughter lying on bed." That is, you know, she was already alive and well. "Again departing from the region of Tyre and Sidon, he came through the midst of the region of Decapolis to the Sea of Galilee. And then they brought to him one who was deaf and had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to put his hand on him." And now he's describing it in a different way than you see in Matthew. "And he took him aside from the multitude." He's not interested in a big show like many are, you know, the so-called faith healers, because they're after, you know, their own glory. "And he put his fingers in his ears, and he spat and touched his tongue." You know, it sounds weird when you think about it, but when you understand that everything has spiritual symbolism, when you go to the book of the laws, we went through it, you see all those things that God gave to the priesthood to do in the temple, every single one of them had a meaning. In other words, to dip their finger in the blood of the sacrifice, and to touch, you know, their toe, and to touch their ear, and to touch their, you know, their finger, and things like that. You know, all that may sound strange and weird unless you understand the law of God and you begin to understand the spirituality behind it. You see, now that's in essence what he was doing here. All these things are symbolically spiritual and with spiritual connotations. And, you know, yeah, well, we can elaborate an awful lot about it, but we're not going to do it at this point. And then, looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, "Hipateach," in Hebrew means open up. So, you know, several times here you see that in most cases, God, that is, Jesus Christ, spoke to his people in Hebrew, be it in Galilee, where, you know, they spoke mostly Arameans, and they tended to speak more in Hebrew in Jerusalem, but still, Hebrew was his first language, and also Aramaic. So oftentimes you see that he's using Hebrew here rather than Aramaic, and so that's what he said here. In verse 35, immediately his ears were opened, and the impediment of his tongue was loosed, and he spoke plainly. And then he commanded them that they should tell no one. You know, that means the person and his family. He's not interested in promotion of himself there at that point. And he's not interested in publicity. You know, he wants to keep it quiet. But the more he commanded them, the more widely they proclaimed it. They couldn't care less about his command, about his law. Now, that's the way we are. You see, we are so excited. And all we think is about ourselves. We cannot contain ourselves, and never dawns on us that the Word of God is a command. And many of us do not function that way, unfortunately, especially when we are carnal-minded, even though we have a measure of faith here. A lot of people are that way, and just like little children, you give them a little toy, you know, they start jumping and yelling and screaming, and they go and show, you know, all their friends, whole neighborhood, you see, and we forget God. So we see here, you know, the people of God that were always in that state of mind, even, you know, when they were not necessarily malicious and evil, they have never, generally speaking, have developed that awesome respect and honor for God and for His law and for His command. And how many of us have it today? And so we read in verse 37, "And they were astonished beyond measure, saying, He has done all things well. He makes both the deaf to hear and the mute to speak." Well, he's been doing it for quite a while, and wherever he went, that was the reaction. So that was, in essence, a multitude in contrast to the few, you know, the picky point, you know, they were always bringing to him because of their own problems. And that was mainly the religious leaders. And then chapter 8, we read, "In those days, the multitude being very great," that followed him, that is, And having nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said to them, and mind you, these people followed him wherever, and they forgot about food, about provisions, about things like that. Wherever he went, they followed him. So you see the thirst among the people, you see the hunger among the people. Obviously, the religious leaders were not satisfying their thirst and their hunger, and people felt empty, just like many feel today. They don't feel kind of comfortable, they don't feel filled, they don't feel happy in the religion, you see, in their environment. And that's, in essence, what was happening here, beside all the troubles that they had with Rome and persecution and affliction. And so people were in desperate need for deliverance, physical and spiritual. That's why they followed him wherever he went. And so he says, I have great compassion on the multitude because they have now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. Imagine that. For 3 days they go, they don't even think about food, and they've got, you know, women and children with them. But they were so hungry and thirsty for righteousness' sake, and they were being filled, that they did not think about the physical. And that was the state of his wife, the state of his people at this time. And verse 3, and if I send them away, he said, hungry to their own houses, they will faint on the way, for some of them have come from afar. And then his disciples answered him, how can one satisfy these people with bread here in the wilderness? He asked them, how many loaves do you have? And they said, 7. And we read that account before that. There were two accounts. One, you know, where they had the 4,000, another time the 5,000. And so he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground. And, you know, his word was a command. He told them, well, sit down. That means you should sit down. So don't stand in line and, you know, begin to push and shove as a, you know, the manner and the custom of mobs, you know, especially when they are very hungry. So sit down. Let's have order here. You see, there's plenty for everybody, and don't need to try to grab, you know, whatever. And that's what he's saying here. He commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground, and he took the 7 loaves and gave thanks, broke, and gave them to his disciples to set before them. And so everything that he gave them came from himself. You see, he took the bread, he looked up to heaven, he asked God. You know, he thanked God for it because that's the ultimate source of it while he's in the flesh. You see, it's God who is taking care of the universe and sustaining the earth. And then he broke it, just like he did in the Last Supper. He took the bread and he broke it, symbolic of his own body. And that's what he does here again. And that's why when he said, made that statement, you see, you begin to understand it better, you know, unless you just are transfixed, you know, the religious teaching that has been handed for centuries, therefore you think that's the only truth, you see? Where, you know, most people think, well, that's a memorial, or a lot of people think in a memorial you do it only once a year, you see? You don't eat bread only once a year. That's why he told them, as often as you do it in remembrance of me. And so many times he broke bread, you see, and he, just like the custom was, you see, of the culture, of the society, which was meaningful, where the host would be doing it. And it's always the men of the house. You know, unless there are no men in the house and the woman does it, you know, and gives it to her kids. But he does that, symbolic of giving from himself. And when they eat it, they're all sharing of what they ate from himself, you see. So that gives them unity. You see, the unity of the faith. And they're eating that which came from him, not from man. You see, in contrast to what men like people to believe, you know, government always tells you, well, we'll do this for you, we'll do this for you, or the government gave it to me. You see, instead of giving the credit and the glory and the honor to God, they take it to themselves. And so when we eat that, that's what Christ said, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, speaking spiritually about his teachings and his word, and yet those who are to teach it should always remind people and should remind themselves. It's not my own teachings, not my own words. It's the words of God. You see, so treat them, you know, with respect and honor. And this is what he's doing here. He broke and gave it to them, to his disciples, to set before them, and they set them before the multitude. And they also had a few small fish, and having blessed them, so he blessed them too, and he said to them, notice that there are two blessings here, one for the bread and one for the fish. And generally speaking, when you have a meal, you have a general blessing for everything. And he said to them also, why did he bless them in this case when you think about it? Well, because a miracle was going to be performed not only at the bread but also on the fish, and that's in essence what was the reason for it. Double blessing there. And so they ate and were filled, and they took up seven large baskets of leftover fragments. Now in the meal, in the Jewish home, in the community of Israel, when they eat the bread, you know, they have a blessing for the bread, and then when they drink the wine, then they have a blessing for the wine, you see? And that's exactly what he did also in the Last Supper. So all those things are within the context of the religion of Israel, of the customs of Israel, of the culture of Israel, and people do not have that context and background. They obviously do not understand properly what they're reading, and therefore do not have a proper appreciation for it. And so this is what he's doing here, and he gives it to all of them. And so all of them are eating now. So they are, as they ate and were filled, and they took up seven large baskets of leftover fragments. You see? It's not just like custom of people. You know, you eat it and you throw away what you don't want. You see? This was, in essence, was symbolic of his body. You don't eat and you just throw it away. You see? And even when it came to food, you should show proper respect for the food, and then you store it, you know, if you can, you know. If it's something that is going to spoil, it's one thing, you throw it away. But if it's something that can be eaten, you show respect for it, and you gather it, and you eat it next time. And so here they end up, even though they had only seven loaves, now they end up with seven large baskets of leftover fragments. And so later on, you know, these are the leftovers they're going to eat. And verse 9, now those who had eaten were about 4,000. That's only the men. Oftentimes, biblically, you have to understand that they generally count the men. It doesn't mean women don't count or children don't count, but basically, the generally mentioned the household. You see, the head of the household, and then you figure out, you know, more or less, how many in every family. But that's biblically another way they count. And so, when you read 4,000, you know that there are many more than 4,000. Verse 10, immediately got into a boat with his disciples and came to the region of Dalmanutha, an area by that name. And then, mind you, he's still in the Galilee at this point. Then the Pharisees came out and began to dispute with him. They're not coming to honor him, to respect him, you see, to learn from him. That was their nature. And that's basically that group, and as I mentioned before, that they were mainly the ones that were doing it from the house of Shammai. You know, they're always the picky, the arch conservatives among the Pharisees, you see. And, you know, the others were doing it too, but these were doing it the most. That was in their nature. And they came disputing with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven, testing him. So that was their attitude. They came to dispute, you see. They came to seek from him a sign, and they came to test him. They're not willing to accept all that they have heard, all that they have seen, all that they have experienced, you see. All that didn't mean anything to them. In other words, do not confuse me with the facts attitude. A lot of people have it. They're not interested in the truth. You try to sit down with them, to explain to them, you see, they're not interested in that. They've got their own mind and their own ideas, their own concepts, and what do they care about anything else? That's the problem, unfortunately, of this group of Pharisees, the religious teachers who should have been the most humble, the most meek, and the closer to God, and they were the farthest. And oftentimes they are, and to this very day. They are the ones who are stricken mostly with arrogance and self-exaltation and selfishness and whom do you think you are attitude and things like that. And God generally does not deal with these kind of people. That's as simple as that. And verse 12 we read, but he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, why does this generation seek a sign? Now all the multitudes that followed him, they were not seeking for a sign, they were experiencing it. You see, they weren't in that set of mind. So he's talking specific about the leadership. Assuredly, I say to you, no sign shall be given to this generation. Well, this point, Mark does not bring the teaching that you find in Matthew about Jonah, you see. And that's all he's saying here at this point. And he left them, and getting into the boat again, departed to the other side. When you read it in the Hebrew, which was translation of Greek and other accounts, you see there sort of a disgust on his part. You see, the way he said it to them and the way he walked away from them. Because of their attitude, again, you know, their attitude stunk. They were not there, you know, to eat of his flesh. They were not there hungry or thirsty. They were not there with the spirit of humility and meekness. And so he's not about just to stick around with them. Just like he said, you know, do not give your pearls to the swine. Those were swine behaving like such. In other words, had no capacity to appreciate what he was doing and what he is and his teachings. And these are the top leaders of the nation, spiritual leaders. You see, that's unfortunately the way it is. And other disciples had forgotten to take bread, and they did not have more than one loaf with them in the boat. Then he charged them, saying, take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. And they reasoned among themselves, saying, it is because we have no bread. So they're not paying attention to what he's saying here. They're just thinking about physical things, and they're not thinking spiritually yet. And oftentimes people are like that. They come to the Bible and they begin to think with human reasoning and intellectual thoughts instead of thinking spiritually, trying to go behind the lines, so to speak, between the lines and read not only what it says but what it means. And so they reason among themselves, saying, it is because we have no bread. But Jesus said, being aware of it, said to them, why do you reason because you have no bread? And we're going to stop at this point. This is again Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.